welcome to another episode of Temporal Culture War, where we dig into what the hell was going on in America in the early 2000s while we watch one of television history's most maligned properties, Star Trek Enterprise? Question mark? I'm Maddie Lipchansky.
I'm Clayton Ashley.
That one is true. That I don't have any questions about. Oh. Clayton, I know who you are.
That's great. Love to be known.
This week, it is episode 19 of season 1, Acquisition, and the week of March 27th, 2002. I am your episode's science officer, which means I'm talking to you about what the fuck was going on in March of 2002. You can see that my brain is functioning at full capacity.
Yeah, there's been a lot happening in the June 2025.
That's
been a lot to also think about March 2002.
Yeah, it's incredible. But we are, you know, it's... let's see. So we are kind of living in the long 2002 in a lot of ways, which is kind of what our show is about, isn't it? So like in terms of, let's start in the bummer zone, shall we?
Fine. Like,
come to the bummer zone.
If you'll
me,
make
Clayton.
Me.
Play the bummer zone, bumper music.
Wah, wah.
So this is, the day this episode aired was the so-called Passover Massacre, which was one of the first, and worst shots fired of the Second Intifada. Where something like 30 people were killed at a Seder by a suicide bomber in Israel. And this caused, of course, echoes of now. Israel, of course, massively over-retaliates, reinvades the West Bank in the biggest military operation since the 1967 war. Now it's probably, you know, but like... At that point, the biggest operations in 67, and we sort of enter the modern period of how Israeli let's just call it apartheid functions. 2002 is right after the Second Intifada is when everything ramps up. They build the big walls. Anyways, So this is like the start of basically the worst kinds of aggression again after like. The all the gesturing in the 90s towards peace, etc. Right. So like the Iraq war is popping off, all the run up to it anyways, the Afghanistan war popping off, Israel is once again enacting just absolute massacres of civilians in response to hostilities. Anyways, so that's that. And then lots of Second Intifada stuff is happening.
And imagine the politics are probably also connected a little bit to the fact they now have a evangelical Republican
in
charge of the U.S. government.
Yeah, like for sure. And like Israelis are like firing at Yasser Arafat's like security detail. It's gnarly out there. This week also, if we can get even more of a bummer, this is Bummer Central this week. Yeah.
Oh.
This is this week, the Archbishop of... I'm going to butcher this name because it's Polish and I'm Belarusian. So why would I pronounce their names correctly? Those dogs? No, I don't know. Belarus is...
We take no claim on Belarus. Yeah, here.
Belarus is invent
no stance.
Disco music. Polish is dog. No, I... Pope John Paul II accepts the resignation of Archbishop Juliusz Pates? Anyways, he's a sex pest. Anyways, so like... This is now starting to happen. If you recall, you've seen the film Spotlight.
Not? Great film. Fantastic. Terrifying, but
It does. It is one of those things where it's like, oh yeah, the really big story broke like a week before 9/11 or something.
Oh
yeah. It was like contemporaneous with it. And
then
like immediately got overshadowed.
I forgot. Yeah.
So, but we're in the long ramifications of that. The Archbishop of an entire very Catholic nation has resigned due to sex abuse.
I mean, yeah, a lot of things you think about might be different had 9/11 not happened or happened in the same way or something. And I completely forgot that story was just starting to break and then out of the news, basically.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the penetration of that story culturally, let's not be crass, was obviously serious and real and we all know about it. Mm-hmm. But it would have been like the worldwide news for probably years.
Yeah.
the global war on terror not immediately been born.
Wow.
I don't know, the McCain-Feingold Act was signed this week. Congratulations to Senators McCain and Feingold for their big campaign finance reform thing, bipartisan effort that everybody pointed to for years to being good, and we fixed campaign finance.
Sure hope the Supreme Court doesn't do anything about that.
If you'll recall, it's a good question I meant to ask. When was the Citizens United decision?
It's, I believe, 2010.
Oh, yeah. It's cool. So we got...
Not even a decade.
We got 8 whole years of decent campaign finance law. So congratulations, 2002 to 2010, for having less soft money in politics marginally.
Slightly.
Slightly. So that was the bummer zone. Let's get the end of the bummer zone. Womp womp. Instead of bum bum.
Yeah.
It's like I was going backwards with it. Just really it's
conveyed well.
Really, really funny stuff. Music is continued. We're back into like the episodes are back to back weeks, so there's not much movement in the music world. Jennifer Lopez's Ain't It Funny has its boot on the neck of America. And it will not relinquish it.
I mean, after that news zone, I don't feel like it's that funny. I don't know. Read the room.
Hey, J-Lo, it's not funny. That guy was a sex pest. hey, Jennifer Lopez, those are children. Lopez. Come on. It's J-Lo. Not funny. It's not funny.
It ain't. Not funny. It's also not.
It ain't. It's not. Yeah. Nickelback's How You Remind Me, though, however, has... Is still falling down the charts slightly. Is now merely number 4.
Merely
number 4. Now in the top 10, Kylie Minogue's "Can't Get You Out of My Head," a song that rocks.
Have we talked about Kylie?
I don't think we've talked about Kylie Minogue. She was at number 10 last week.
Okay, yeah.
But she's moving up the chart. She's moving and grooving. She's up at number 7. I can't get that song out of my head every time I hear the title of that song. That song kicks ass. That's like her big comeback, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She was gone for a little while. She comes back. It's Kylie Minogue. She still looks great. She sounds great.
It's good to know there is still some good music every once in a while.
Yeah. Sarah. I agree. Still in the top 20, Leanne Rimes' Can't Fight the Moonlight, hanging tough.
Yeah, wow.
Hanging tough. You know, I was looking at just out of the top 20, another good song, mm-hmm. Outkast's The Whole World featuring Killer Mike, which is a good song. It's the one that was on the Idlewild soundtrack, right. I believe. Mm-hmm. Another thing at its peak position now at only 4 weeks on the chart at number 31, Vanessa Carlton's 1,000 Miles.
Oh my God. I hadn't even considered that. That did peak, right? That'll get up there.
That'll get up there, as will POD's Youth of the Nation.
At number 34.
Another POD has entered the chat. Michelle Branch's All You Wanted, also just on the tail of Vanessa Carlton, thus confusing them in my mind for all time. Anyway, so that's your music. I was looking at, like, because there's a tag on the Billboard charts, like, what's new? And it's like, what's new? And it's like, Goo Goo Dolls, Here Is Gone, debuting at number 63. And I'm like, I've never heard that song in my life. Have you?
No, I'm pulling it up now.
At number 74, debuting, Avant's Making Good Love, a song I vaguely remember, but I could not sing it for you if I wanted. And a song called Half Crazy, one word, by Music, spelled with a Q. Sure. You know, Music Soul Child. Okay, whatever. R&B guy.
Would it be pronounced Musique?
Musique. Maybe. And Angie Stone's Wish I Didn't Miss You. I know Angie Stone. I don't know that song. Okay. Anyways, that's music. Get out of here, music. I'm putting you aside until next week. Would you like to hear about the television, Queen?
I sure would.
Okay. So, you know, it's a Wednesday night. We are, of course, we here at Star Trek Enterprise, which I now think of myself as on the team. out of the networks, we're coming in. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. We're at 6th place out of 7. We are beating. No. Fifth. Fifth. We are beating,
that's good,
of course,
we
on the network PAX. Candid Camera?
Yeah. Fuck PAX.
We get wrecked. And we, of course, are destroying the vile Dawson's Creek because it's a rerun.
Stay down in your lowly 6th place.
Get out of here, Dawson Creek rerun. UN Michigan J Frog on the WB can suck my dick. Coming in fifth, Mr. Star Trek Enterprise, of course.
With a good episode this week, so it deserved
a pretty good episode. However, it is trailing, like barely okay. trailing that 80s show.
Yeah, they were tied last week, I remember. It's funny that that's what they're neck and neck with.
They're neck and neck with a show that lasted, I think, like one third of one season that nobody remembers exists.
Or if they do remember, they hated it.
Yeah. It is, however, the other side of that hour on Fox is Grounded for Life, which is beating our friends pretty soundly.
Yeah.
Of course, the My Wife and Kids ABC juggernaut, but now, of course, with the pilot of the George Lopez show.
Oh.
So please welcome to our television family, Clayton, George Lopez.
Well, why not?
Your show is okay. and of course, at number one, Clayton, are the enemy, the hated, the disgusting. These motherfuckers, they're trying to keep us down and they can't. 60 Minutes too.
Well,
the sequel to 60 Minutes.
You know, they're unfortunately going to get another thing coming now, I realize. So,
what's that?
The destruction of any dignity that their program had.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes, you wait 60 Minutes, too. You'll get what's coming to you.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, I skipped over. We're also losing to Ed on NBC.
Right. Well,
remember Ed?
Yeah.
Remember Ed?
Sort of.
Okay. TV. That screen, in my opinion, too small. Let's get huge with it and go on
big
to the
screen.
Movies. You like my segue?
Yes. It made perfect sense.
So I'm going to go through first, what is new this week that is not in the top 10. A movie called Son of the Bride.
Oh, well, how about that?
A dissatisfied 40-year-old separated and without time for his own daughter and girlfriend, must rethink his life when his father decides to marry his mother, who suffers from Alzheimer's disease, by church? This is not...
Is this,
Box Office Mojo is having a hallucination.
Is this another Mormon movie? Because we discovered that was a thing that started around this time.
Oh, maybe.
I'm just putting that out there. I don't know. I have any idea.
It's Argentinian.
Okay, well...
Is Argentinian film.
I don't know how big the Church of Latter-day Saints was in Argentina, so probably not.
No, I think it seems to be... it was nominated for Best Foreign Language Film at the Oscars.
Well, you know what? I misjudged this one.
Yeah, Elijo de la Noria. Sorry, I feel... Yeah, it's Mormon.
Egg
not
on my
all.
Face.
Egg on your face. It won the Silver Condor.
Wow.
Okay. Also this week, new Stolen Summer. A Catholic boy tries to convert a terminally ill Jewish boy, so he will be able to go to heaven.
Wait.
Uh-huh.
This seems problematic.
Explain.
The converting of a religion to go to heaven.
That's right.
Might offend some people of the religion that requires converting from.
Yeah. So here's the thing about this movie, is if you look at the poster... You know what? I'm just going to copy the image address and I'm going to chat it to you.
Thank you. Also admit that while you were explaining the plot of that movie, my brain was a little bit stuck on how sick it is that I'm assuming Argentina names their movie award the Condors, the Silver Condors.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's really cool.
It's Operation Condor. Anyways, okay. So just look at this. Just look at the poster.
Yeah.
Skip over. There's the one thing that says like a something movie. Uh-huh. Don't worry about that. If you look at this movie, what would you think? Who stars in it?
Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, and Chris Moore.
That's right. Incorrect, Clayton. They are not the stars of this film. The stars of this film are Aidan Quinn, Bonnie Hunt, Kevin Pollak, and Brian Dennehy.
Mm-hmm.
Because this was the first movie produced by Project Greenlight, if you recall. Project Greenlight, which was the HBO, Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, like the film competition.
It's also got this weird tagline. Millions saw the HBO series, now see the full-length final cut.
It seems like the movie, though, is bad and everybody fucking hates it and it made $100,000.
But the movie poster says terrific.
Yeah, it did, in its first week, it's number 47 at the box office. Anyways, into the top 10. Number 10, 40 Days and 40 Nights is still hanging tough.
Mm-hmm.
Number 9, a new movie, Sorority Boys.
Oh, sounds raunchy.
Do you remember Sorority Boys?
Nope.
Oh, not really.
I would not have been allowed to see that, I could guess.
Oh, man. Okay, I need you to real quick just look up Sorority Boys 2002 and look at the poster for me, please.
Now.
Yes. Uh-huh.
I feel like
it's it's a Harlan Williams picture. Yeah. If I recall.
I feel like this was a swerve.
Uh-huh. A swerve how?
They're not dressed how I typically think boys are dressed.
Yes. That's correct. It's directed by Wallace Wolodarski.
Yeah, I was going to say that's
from being Wolodarski in The Life Aquatic and also writing for The Simpsons.
Yeah.
And it's a it's like Harlan Williams and his two friends. They pretend to be girls to be in a sorority, and raunchiness ensues, and they're all covering up their dicks on the poster.
Kappa.
Because that's what makes
Omicron boy. Kappa.
I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. Anyways, number 8, Beautiful Mind, still there. Number 4, The Time Machine. Number 5, We Were Shoulders. Number 5, Resident Evil. 3, Showtime. Or number 4 is Showtime, sorry. And number 3, which is crazy that it's at number 3, is the 20th anniversary reissue of E.T.
Oh, but was this CGI'd E.T. yet?
This was, I believe, the infamous walkie-talkies.
God.
I'm almost positive.
Because brought back some scenes because they could CGI them.
Yeah.
Like they did for the Star Wars, like could bring back some scenes because they could add CGI.
Yeah, they wanted to they replaced the word terrorist with hippie. There was like deleted scenes that they wanted to add in, but there was one with Harrison Ford, but they didn't want to do that because it was too like political or something. With
what?
That, the scene itself was too scary and political. And then this was also the federal agents had their guns replaced with walkie-talkies.
Oh, I remember that. Okay.
A thing Mr. Spielberg later regretted doing, in my recollection. That was the infamous walkie-talkie.
Yeah, I'm looking at that.
That was
image.
Like Steve's been hanging out with George Lucas too much, and he's given him the sort of brain poisoning where you need to go do this shit to your old movies.
Holding their walkie-talkies like a
yeah,
gun.
Mr. Yeah, to Mr. Spielberg's credit, he never did this kind of shit ever again.
Mm-hmm.
A thing I cannot say for Mr. Lucas. Number 2, our friend last week from Ice Age and debuting this week at number 1, Blade 2.
Oh, hell yeah.
Which fucking rips. Sick. Oh, I love Blade.
I didn't even
Blade
think...
2, pretty... What happened in Blade 2? Let's see. Oh, this is the Guillermo one.
Hell yeah. I was starting to remember that's not the night scene one, because that's definitely the first one.
This is the one with the group of vampires called like the Blood Pack.
I forgot that Norman Reedus's character was named Scud.
Yeah, this is a really good one. It's got Chris Christopherson and Ron Perlman. Guillermo del Toro shows up and he's got Ron Perlman in a backpack or something and he just hops out. Listen, if Guillermo's there, you know Ron Perlman's going to show up, and he's going to blow me personally away with this cool performance. You ever seen, I was watching a while ago, it was Guillermo del Toro's first movie, which is called Cronos, which is a cool movie. It's in Spanish, takes place in Mexico, and it's about like a guy trying to stay alive forever, and the villain in it is Ron Perlman playing like a half American, half Mexican guy speaking Spanish the whole movie. Pretty, and I'll say, pretty convincingly.
Damn.
It rocks. So he's been there since the beginning. So of course he's in Blade 2.
Yeah, I mean, I love any time there's like an actor, a director just seems to like really like it.
Yeah.
I don't even know if he likes into movies as much as it probably just likes hanging out with him once I'm on set.
I mean, he's great in all movies, in my opinion. I'm always happy to see him show up.
Absolutely. Yeah, he is
doing Ron Perlman stuff.
Improves in just about anything he's in.
I was going to say Blade 2 aesthetically a very 2002 movie.
Yeah, actually it's like
put that on the list
because I was thinking about how often you get these movie trailers for movies that are not this aesthetic of like nightclub, trench coat, underworld.
Mm-hmm.
Even though that is also a literal aesthetic of a ton of movies of this era, but then just like that aesthetic breaches that and just like put some techno music behind this trailer for The Musketeer.
So that's it for me on this episode.
Well, I've got us covered. Let's get to this episode because we actually had a good time on Enterprise.
Let's go.
So after weeks of I would call big wet farts of episodes.
I'm looking at my notes here and it says dog shit.
Yeah, not over much to write home about. Since the last time, frankly, we had Jeff Combs.
I never know how to pronounce his name.
Yeah,
and I love him so much, but I'm always like, Combs.
And
Sumer is a Kuminin. So what I say, loudly sing cuckoo. Yeah.
But he's not here as our beloved Shran, because he has versatility. He is here as a Ferengi, and this, the first episode of Enterprise that features the Ferengis. This is Acquisition, and it, again, it aired March 27th. And it was interesting to me, the ratings, because this one actually ranked like pretty dang high for an Enterprise episode. So
yeah, this is one of the first Enterprise episodes where they are having a good time.
That's the
they're having fun.
That's the most vibe.
Crazy. The show has been so dour.
It's so weird that like that is the thing that stood out to me of like they seem to all be having fun making this episode and being in this episode. And it's like, where was this TV show this whole time?
Yeah. I mean, I think what it is you've got, for real, it's because Combs and Bakula already are so good together from Shran times, right? Combs is also good with everybody. And it's got fucking Clint Howard on set. Legend.
Yes.
And also, what's his name? Who played Neelix.
Oh, God, yeah, yeah. I was like, I looked up the other
What's
Ferengi.
What's his name? Ethan Phillips.
So we have a real stellar Ferengi cast here.
The fourth Ferengi, I did not recognize him.
So it starts the Enterprise, just immediately, the Enterprise is like adrift, and then we get like a panning down to what, I like it, maybe it's a planet or something? Nope, it's the bald head of a Ferengi.
Beautiful.
And then immediately, my favorite thing about this episode is they all talk in Ferengi, and we don't get it translated. It is just another language, which apparently they based on French. They like did a thing where they like translated it to French and then kind of translated it back and then did some like stuff to it.
Oh, that's, I was thinking about that because I was like, you don't hear Ferengi on Deep Space Nine.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way they developed Ferengi for this episode because this show never has that level of effort because it would be
like
gay.
A lot. Yeah.
It would be gay to do. And this show is straight and butch. And like, just like astounded. And also like when the Ferengi in their first appearance on Next Gen, they're like nonverbal.
Mm-hmm.
They're like grunting.
Yeah.
Like apes.
Because they really didn't know what to do with them back then. Here they have a whole history, so they know exactly what they're doing with them. And it's great that we just like, we have to figure out what they're doing by the implication of like how they talk or what actions they do or gesture. And I love it. It makes you invested. And after the theme, it's like a pretty quick intro. We just established the Enterprise, this is Drift, and these Ferengi have found them. But you all,
and they've like docked with the Enterprise.
Yeah, and docked with the Enterprise. And again, you don't for sure know what's happening here. Are they like here to like help out the Enterprise? Did they do this to the Enterprise? Anyway, and okay, they got air breathers on. You start noticing that like everyone on the Enterprise is passed out. Just whatever they were doing that moment, like some are at dinner and they've like dropped their salad on the floor.
Yeah. And this is a beautiful bit of like, as a little freak like me who watched all of Deep Space Nine, watching this, the first thing they do is look at someone asleep's ears.
Yep.
And they measure them with their fingers. And they like show it to everybody. Like, look how small their fucking ears are, because ears are like the locus of Ferengi culture. Like, it's like,
that's so good.
It's like, if your ears are big, you're like sexually viable.
Yeah.
But also it is like a source of actual erotic pleasure.
Yeah.
So like they're all looking at everybody's ears. And then like later in the episode, when they first see like asleep to pull, they're like, they look at the ears, they look at each other, and you can tell, even though they don't know what they're saying, you know that they're just like, look at the lobes on her. Like, know. Like,
that's
what they're
saying. Yeah. It's so funny. And then so they keep going around cautiously, and they continue to just speak in Ferengi. We don't know they're saying. They pull out a scanner thing, and that's how they, you know, it seems they realize it's safe to breathe now. They take off their little air breathers. And then we get Trip. So he's our one person who's awake because he is in like the medical decontamination room.
Yeah.
Again, it's good how much this is like, you know exactly like what's, you kind of can figure out exactly what's going on now without a single bit of dialogue, which is that there was something in the air that knocked everyone out. The Ferengi knew about it because they were wearing e-breathers and it did not affect Trip because he was in this decontamination chamber. Like, it all is so well scripted and easy to understand, but it's so cool that it was all just action, like stuff happening on screen. Just like, we're always like highlighting how rare that happens on this show, and it's just so good that this has been an entire episode of that so far. Again, you see how much, I mean, Trip is just like figuring out, he's like awake and trying to like, hey Doc, what's up? I've been here a long time and no one's talking to him.
Yeah.
You get back to the Ferengi and they're like obviously know what they're doing because they have not only like little carts hauling around, but little ramps to get them through like the portholes and stuff. It's just, I found that entertaining, that this whole like setup is very much, okay, these guys, this is what they do. So you're getting a sense of like, that's the kind of crew of Ferengi we've got here.
We got pirates. It's all communicated visually very quickly and easily. And like Trip like immediately recognizes that he's in a diehard situation.
It's so good. Yeah.
And like, yeah.
He just gets out of his decontamination room, is in medical when he hears them coming. He like hides up in a crevice above them and they come in and start again, like grabbing stuff and shouting at each other and doesn't understand anything they're saying. Yeah. I love it because of how much it actually does feel earned that he's like looking at these like little freaks that walked in and are just like rifling through stuff.
Yeah.
You know, he just got like out of the decontam room and sees Phlox like unconscious on the ground. And it's just like, what the hell is kind of going on? The Ferengi continue stealing things. They haul out a big torpedo. They're going through the like mess room. And I like the little thing where they like don't like the salad, but they find the pecan pie and run off with that.
Yeah. I mean, sounds good.
And you also notice that they are collecting in the room with all the stuff they've stolen, all of the women on the ship are unconscious in a big pile, including T'Pol.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they see her ears, as you were pointing out.
So strange and good.
So now Trip has moved to engineering and he's able to get on a computer screen and he sees that they have found, you know, like they're fringier on the main deck. And they've grabbed Archer and like hauled him off somewhere to like handcuff him to a pipe or something, basically. And then the scene shifts to like there with the Ferengi and Archer, where they are holding up a translator. And it's good. I like how it doesn't like they immediately figure it out. It actually takes them a while to like get it to start working. And even it's, I don't know why, I just enjoy when they show how a little bit how the translator works, even though I'm usually frustrated by how opaque of a device it is. The fact that it like kicks in halfway through a sentence, I always like that. I don't know.
Like that's always like that one. Yeah, this one, it like kind of makes sense. It's like, okay, it doesn't work, and then it hears enough talking and then it works.
Yeah,
like, okay, sure, fine, great.
I don't know what you need a Hoshi for, but cool.
For when it doesn't work.
Yeah, for when it doesn't work, you're right. So they wake up Archer and they start demanding the location of the vault. Where is your gold platinum? And of course, we all know.
Sorry, Clayton, I have to quibble. It's gold pressed latinum.
Gold pressed latinum.
Latinum is a liquid for the freaks out there for the non-freaks. Sorry, for the normals.
The normals.
Who have not watched Earth's horniest television show, Deep Space Nine. Gold pressed latinum is, latinum is a liquid and it is like unreplicatable, which is why it's so valuable. So the cost of replicating it is worse than, you know, the cost of it,
right.
Whatever.
Okay.
So it is used as currency in a lot of the galaxy, and it is and they put it into gold bars so it can be carried around easily, because gold is easier to replicate and is like non-conductive.
I've watched all Deep Space Nine, and I missed that, but I do love it because it does make sense in a world where you have replicators. Why would anything be valuable? But yeah, okay,
yes.
Cool.
which leads me to Maddie's plot hole corner.
Uh-oh.
Come with me.
Okay,
come with
let's
me
go,
into my
let's
corner.
Go. Putting on
duck,
my hat.
Duck down, kind of. It's like a hustle through this
the
little
plot
tunnel.
Holes are very weak here. It could collapse into
Yeah,
time.
Yeah. So normally I'm not a plot hole carer, but I do have to say in this one instance, I believe in the pilot of Deep Space Nine, Quark, our resident Ferengi on Deep Space Nine, is scammed out of a bunch of latinum, and he's left with a big vault of just gold with nothing in it. And he keeps saying it's just gold, worthless gold. While Odo, the sheriff who hates him, laughs and laughs and laughs. So here, where Archer is like, we've got a bunch of gold bars, all the Ferengi are like, sounds great. And I was like, error. Like, it is saying like you have a vault full of empty wallets. That's all. It was driving me insane.
Now,
I'm
knowing,
like, I gotta mention this on my stupid podcast. I have to.
Yes, this is where else?
Where else to mention this? Nobody else on Earth would care about this, except for maybe one quarter of the listeners of the show.
After he says the entirely wrong thing that should have ruined this entire episode.
That's right. After the episode is ruined forever.
Yeah. Archer sees that Trip is like up in the rafters watching this happening. And they start mentioning how, you know, okay, there is no vault, or he doesn't know. And we may as well just get out of here. What the values we have, including the women, which we can get a lot of latinum for on the slave market. And so Archer is like, he gets a read on the Ferengi really quickly, which, I mean, they're not subtle. So I don't think it's like necessarily any kind of plot hole that he could figure this out fairly quickly. But he's suddenly like, oh, let's negotiate.
Yeah.
You know what? I was lying. There is totally a vault. And as long as you let me keep half, you know, negotiate. Mm-hmm. He negotiates too hard of a bargain. And they're like, screw you. We'll find it ourselves. But he has gotten them to like waste more time. So,
yes.
Mission accomplished. We have finally, though, because I knew Combs was in this episode, I was like, which one of these Ferengis is Combs? Why haven't I, like, I don't feel like any of these, he's doing a really good job if it's one of these guys. But then we get Krim, and I'm like, oh, Krim. Here's Combs.
Krim to the Krim. Doing a different character, but largely the same voice.
Yeah.
He's Liquidator Brunt.
Yeah.
On Deep Space Nine. Yeah.
And very different personality also from his Enterprise character.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of the opposite in a lot of ways. So Krim is like the new guy amongst the Ferengis. They all treat him like dirt, as is their societal ways. But he also does seem kind of dumb. So, I don't know.
The rule of Ferengi is that for every Ferengi you have, you'll also have a like one who's like cunning and a businessman, mm-hmm. and you'll have one that is dumber than fucking dirt, which is the sort of the Rom hypothesis.
Yes, the lackey. Yes. Rom is good, though. I like Rom.
Listen, we love Rom. We love Rom. Rom the communist? We love Rom. I'm a big fan of Rom. Rom is my hero.
Oracles of the world unite.
Yeah, he's got a hot wife.
Right.
He married a Dabo girl. Not all of us can accomplish that. But he's well, there's a sort of a, on the, my old Deep Space Nine show with my friend Mark, we would talk about how Rom is sort of like a Flowers for Algernon issue.
Oh, no.
For one episode, he would be like so smart.
Yeah.
And the next episode, he would be so stupid.
Right.
But anyways.
Krim is a straight line going up in this episode, but we'll get to that.
Oh, Krim.
So, first of all, the first dumb thing he does is is easily distracted by Archer, who he is assigned to like make move all the stuff they've stolen into their ship. So the other Ferengi can go search. It's just Krim and Archer. But then Archer's very quickly is like, I'm so thirsty and also hungry. Can you go get me some food? And he's like, fine, I will. And he goes and gets it. And then Trip, who has been like peeking around the corner so Archer knows he's nearby, he can run in, kind of start talking about like, what the hell is going on? What should we do? And this is where Trip learns from Archer that there's a hypo spray that they use to wake him up in a cargo bay. He's like, go use that and wakes him up some other people. So then we get our third Enterprise character from the episode because he goes back and wakes up to T'Pol. And hilariously, she wakes up to find a Trip who is still, this whole time, he's been in his underwear, basically, from the decon chamber.
Yeah, this has to be a diehard thing, right? It's got to be. It's got to be them doing, like, we're doing Die Hard, like, he's in his underwear.
Right, I mean, it doesn't last much longer after this, but it's probably a nod, yeah. He didn't do enough, like, vent climbing yet, though.
Yeah, he's not, like, stepping on glass.
Yeah,
he's not
hiding a blaster on his back.
He was climbing around the Jeffries tubes.
He was a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
But, you know, hilarious little bit here where she's like, why am I waking up to a semi-naked Trip and also all the other women are of Enterprise are unconscious next to me? Funny. But before Trip could do anything else, Archer and Krim walk in. T'Pol pretends to go to sleep. And this is also where you, again, get another scene of the Ferengi being really weird and horny about...
Oh, they're so horny.
Specifically T'Pol. And Krim is like caressing her and touching her ears. And this is where Archer starts to get the idea that, like, you know, I can maybe get this guy on my side because of the fact that he has a thing for T'Pol, but that'll be later. The thing that happens after this is they, you know, Archer and Krim grab some stuff and leave again. And then when T'Pol like wakes back up, she says, "There are times I wish Vulcans hadn't learned to repress their violent tendencies." Who says Vulcans don't have a sense of humor? Unfortunately, they don't have...
She is weirdly very funny in this episode, I thought.
Yes, yes.
Like, she's... I mean, we'll get to it, but like towards the end of the episode, legitimately very funny shit from T'Pol.
Yes, she's... They use her, dry sense of humor really well here.
Yeah.
So, after we have a commercial break so the trip can get dressed. And then the Ferengi... There's a lot of like cutting in this that's kind of like, here's what Trip's doing, just getting some clothes on, and then like cut. The Ferengi, they are arguing because they cannot find the vault. And this is where I start naming the Ferengi. We've got Velvet Ferengi because he's wearing like a really sweet like maroon velvet jacket or something.
Yeah.
And he's getting annoyed about like, we thought there'd be a lot of treasure here. And he starts being like, I'm going to keep what I find. So, you know, there's a bit of a discord going on between them. And while this is happening, T'Pol is like watching on a video screen from somewhere. And at a certain moment, she turns on this alarm. So, of course, that is very bad for the big-eared Ferengi.
No, it is not good.
They're all rushing around to find out how to turn it off. And that allows her to like just kind of sneak in, grab something that they had like tried to steal in their like little pile. And then she puts it in a bag, and it was like kind of, you know, not exactly sure what's going on here at first, but then she like leaves. And once they go back to their stuff, the Velvet Ferengi is like, hey, where are my, I don't know what, the transponders or wherever. And he's getting really pissed, demands to look in another Ferengi's bag, and oh, look, there they are. So yeah,
I think you're getting played like a piano.
It's too easy. I feel like they didn't even need to put them in the bag. She could have just stolen them, but like,
yeah,
there's a bit of a like, yeah, it's really twist the knife and make them mad at each other.
Good plan. It's the sort of thing where like this, like the Ferengi as like the only capitalist race that we really deal with in any of the Star Trek shows are so easy to manipulate.
Incredibly easy.
Because their motivations are so surface level and easy to predict. Because capitalism turns you into a moron.
Yeah.
Is sort of like the stance, which is very funny for that to be on this show, which is again like the Star Trek for Republicans.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think too deeply
like,
about this.
Like, do we think like Lawrence is stewing in his truck watching this on his little TV?
There are a couple times when Archer starts talking about how like, yeah, we've given up the like the seeking money kind of things. And I think
like in the last like 3 weeks of show, 2 weeks, they've been like, you know, we don't like in this on this show, hunting and money.
Really?
Lawrence just honking his horn outside the mall in the truck that he watches his show in. Like, I hate this.
But we love it. Yeah. I wish we loved the anti-hunting episode more. To a point. All right. So, Fringy, okay, they're getting mad at each other, but they're still just really focused on the vault. Archer starts tempting Krim with the vault, saying, hey, you know what? All those guys are making fun of you. What if you and me went in on the vault? We can split it 50-50. And Krim seems to almost want to take him up on it, especially when he's like, I'll throw in T'Pol, but he's still a lackey at heart, I guess. So he's not quite there yet. But he does say something about like, you got to have some initiative. And this is an important plot point. Great scene where you suddenly cut to the Ferengi, like seemingly interrogating someone. And you're like, oh, no, have they awoken another human or something on the ship? Demanding where the vault is, and then it cuts it as Porthos. Perfect, beautiful scene. They're like, this thing, I love the like joke where they're like, this thing must be Archer's next meal. And then one of them is like, I don't know, look at its ears.
Yes.
Very, very good joke.
It's so gross. That bit is so funny. And Porthos is just standing there wagging his tail.
Yeah, he's so happy. And this scene is also good.
It's great dog acting.
Yeah. And then they just like put Porthos in a chest and can close it, which also kind of funny to me. And when they're doing so, Trip is spotted and Velvet Ferengi, he turns around, sees him, like shoots him, but misses. And then Trip runs away. And we have this kind of good scene where Trip is run to the mess hall and he's just pretending to be asleep like all the other humans. And the Ferengi is like looking around, and when he's like standing right next to Sleeping Trip, I guess he knocks something, a spoon or something, and it gets noticed, but that's still enough of a surprise for Trip to like knock him down, start fighting, and then bite his ear. Which, again, they figured out the weak points very quickly here.
Very well, these guys love to all, I mean, listen, all they do is talk about like business and ears.
And ears, yeah.
Touch so ears. Very quickly, you're like, I'm just going to jerk these guys' ears off and talk about business. Like,
unfortunately, as Trip is like running away, Trenchcoat Ferengi, which is, I'd say, our other kind of like major Ferengi character in this.
Yeah.
Who's also the boss, clearly.
That's and that's Neelix there.
That's our Neelix. Okay.
Who you also might recognize as Mr. Gorfine from Inside Llewyn Davis.
Oh.
Yeah.
I would have no idea. Uh-huh. Yeah. He has this like sick electro whip for some reason.
Yeah, because it's cool as fuck, Clayton. That's why.
And he's got his like a trench coat, and he just like shocks Trip a couple times, and so Trip is captured. Archer is still working Krim, still trying to get him to flip. But before he can really push him any harder, the rest of the Ferengis and Trip enter the cargo bay, and oh no, we get drama. I like this because you're kind of like, I don't know where this is going to go. What's happening? Was this like Trip's intention? Didn't really seem like it because he got jumped by Trenchcoat Ferengi. So what happens though is that Velvet and Trenchcoat Ferengi start arguing about whether the fact that Trip is awake means that the others might be waking up sooner. Maybe they got the dosage wrong. Maybe it's not as effective as they thought. So it's like a good contextual argument for why one wants to leave now and one wants to like keep searching for the vault. And a part of Trip's or Trenchcoat's argument is like, let's just leave now and take the women. And so Trip is like, I'll tell you where the vault is. You gotta leave my wife and the women. And which is a great moment, because then you get Krim being like, wait, is T'Pol your wife? And he's like, no, it's Hoshi.
That's right.
And this leads to an argument between Archer and Trip, where Archer's like, hey, you're out of line. Don't you dare tell them anything. And, you know, classic, we're both captured. Let's use this to convince them more that this is real. It is enough of a confrontation between the two humans that the Ferengi are like, okay, this guy knows where the vault is. Let's go find it.
Yeah.
And so, again, though, we have this argument between the Ferengi where none of them trust the others to let just one of them go with Trip and find
it. Well, why would they?
They'll pack their pockets.
Because of capitalism.
Yeah. Right. So they all have to go, including our third wheel Ferengi, who I never named. And so that just leaves Krim and Archer again. But before all three of them leave, Krim finally stands up for himself. He's like, I need to take initiative. I want to go. And they all just kind of are like, no, stay here. And then he's like,
yeah,
okay. And then they all laugh at him.
Yeah, you're like the designated guy we get to exploit.
So he made it. He tried, but you know. And poor then, Krim. Again, real good acting by Archer here. He's just like, oh, my back. Krim, you have to load stuff now. I can't.
Yeah. Old water polo injury. You guys know what that
is,
right?
Yes, right. It's a reference to the water polo.
But I was like, does that run through the translator for them?
Right, yes. What does it run? Do Ferengi have like sports?
Well, even if they did, like, I mean, this is the problem with automatic translation, right?
Yeah.
As like a technology that exists in something is like, what the fuck you mean polo?
Yeah, it's enough to convince Krim, though, so I guess they do have some equivalent to water.
They must have horses and pools on Ferenginar.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's I guess, what the answer to that is.
Yep. So this gets Archer alone, or I guess more importantly, I guess because this was part of their plan the whole time, it gets Krim to go to the Ferengi ship alone to load stuff on, and T'Pol is waiting there for him.
Oh.
And she does a great like temptation scene where the first thing she says is, did you come to rescue me? And then just starts like talking about how actually the humans are awful. They've imprisoned her and she needs someone who's brave. Starts stroking his lobes after he asks.
Yeah.
And then after like a couple strokes, gives him the old Voken nerve pinch, which I don't think we've seen yet.
No, I don't think we have, which like you'd think that it would happen more often, because this is like before Vulcans have like really formed the Vulcan culture that we see on the other shows.
True.
So you'd think they'd be pinching each other all willy-nilly.
or any of the other times that they were in kind of sticky situations, but I guess it works here.
Yeah.
So that takes care of Krim for a second, I guess. But the more important thing is that Trip is just like leading these Ferengi on like wild goose chase all through tubes and hallways and whatnot. Until they get to a room where I forgot there was a little quick establishing scene where Trip placed of like big vault lock thing on a door to make it more convincingly look like the vault.
Yeah.
And then he just pulls the like, oh, let me go in here first, just, you know, in case Archer booby trapped it or something. And they're like, no, I want to go in first. I want to go in first. And so they all rush in there as fast as they can. Somehow, after stunning Krim, T'Pol has found her way here very quickly because she's like hiding in the little room behind the door. And so the second they like figure out what's happening and there's nothing in this little engineering room, she stuns them all. And that's that.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of wish that had, I don't know, ended with a bit more. There's something about it that as much as it all led up to a great scene, it was just like, oh, okay. And then they stun them. But we get some little wrap up, which is nice. My favorite of which is when T'Pol goes to unbind Archer. And like right before she's going to unlock his handcuffs, she just starts repeating the things he said to admittedly get Krim to stop, to like kind of leave her alone. But things he said, like she's uninteresting and annoying and doesn't have a sense of humor.
Yeah. It's really good.
It's very good, like extremely passive aggressive. And the way she like does a couple more, like just holding the key in his face, but still not unlocking it. Like,
yeah,
it's good.
It's incredible.
They make the Ferengi put everything back and they warn them to stay the heck away from Vulcans and humans.
Yeah. Don't come back for at least 200 years exactly or something. Yeah.
Stop speaking your language for some reason.
Stop speaking your language forever. Thank you.
And then to icing on the cake, they bind all the Ferengi to like their chairs in their ship and put Krim back in charge.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, there's something about this that, like, I know they're, like, trying to fit this in to the, like, canon story of the fact of Picard being the one who makes first contact. The, like, official contact.
With Ferengis, you mean?
With Ferengis.
Yeah, yeah.
But the fact here that they have both this, like, warning to stay the hell away, but also they've, like, kind of made friends with Krim here and have him on their side. Like, it felt like, isn't this an opportunity for you to, like, arrest some Ferengi pirates and also be like, hey, we want diplomatic relations, but we will arrest your pirates. No,
because that screws up the canon of the other show. Yeah, no, I mean, I get it. And it's like, listen, it's a big universe. What are these guys going to do? Go to the government on their own planet and be like, we're not supposed to go there.
Exactly.
There's one ship. And it's like, no, it's like, I guess it makes sense.
Yeah.
A chance meeting on the road.
And apparently, the thing I found interesting about this episode that was so fun and funny and had some really good, like, pacing and scripting of action and without instead of dialogue, it got kind of torn apart by the critics at the time and like the
really?
Fan sites. Like, it was not rated very highly.
Huh.
And it's one of those things that you have like Pace magazine did a like retrospective in 2014, and they're actually like, this is a great episode, it's really fun. And I think that's, I don't know what about it at the time, it I guess it felt like light and fluffy or something. Maybe they were annoyed at the fact that it was doing another kind of prequel-y bit, even though it's a good prequel-y bit. It's strange to me. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it was like the popular mode at the time was to get a little grittier with it. And they weren't doing that here. And people were thrown for a loop. I don't know. Maybe.
So
or
odd.
People were stupid in 2001 because they were crazy.
Yeah.
From smoke inhalation from 9/11.
And they... But the thing is the people who watched it, they were up, you know, like I said, it rated well. It had a high viewership. It's just the critics for some reason.
Dawson's Creek.
Yeah.
It had Clint Howard. What else do you want?
Once again, I don't know when we'll get a good episode in this first season. After this
one. No. Oh, really?
I didn't look too far ahead, but I don't think we get another Andorian episode until the second season.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get a Phlox. Who can say?
Maybe we'll get a Phlox. I feel like, what's going on here? No. Well, fuck me, I guess.
Please subscribe to our Patreon to make this worthwhile.
Please, my family is starving.
We might watch good content on there, like the Musketeer. I almost said the Rocketeer, but you know, that'd also be pretty good.
Or the Musketeer. But yeah, there's all sorts of 2002 era shit we should be watching. We should talk about that.
Yeah, we'll probably have something coming up soon.
Yeah, yeah.
But this has been another episode of Temporal Culture War.
Yeah.
And even we have a good episode, we're still a little bummed out.
We're still like, yeah, yeah. I was thinking about the other stuff. And I'm Nino Chansky, as always.
Until next time.
Until next time. Let's go.
Let's go. He said set let's go in such a long time.
He hasn't said it in so long. But I'm saying it. I'm keeping the hope alive.
Yeah, let's keep it alive.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.